Imagine for a minute that you wanted to add on to your house, or as us as a congregation, we decided we were going to build another building at our church, or maybe add an addition to our church, and we go to the government, we go to the authorities in our city and ask for a building permit, and we're told no more building, you can't build anymore, you're big enough, or we'll make you wait 15 years for it. Imagine decide in your Sunday school class you want to have a Bible study at your house, and you're told, yeah, you can do that, but as long as you don't have more than 25 people there. Imagine if you finally get that building permit, and then you decide you're going to build a little something on your church, and you go to the store, and there's no nails. Or you go to the store, you want to get a laundry detergent, and they say, all we have is paper towels this week. This is what believers in Cuba go through. And imagine if that was us. We'd be the nastiest, meanest, bitterest people in the world, would we not? We'd be ready to fight somebody. But these are some of the most gracious believers, most not bitter at all, just kind, excited, joyful people that I've ever met in my life. I wasn't able to go to Cuba this year, but I went last year and I got to experience it. But we had a team of 10 go this year, and this is our sixth year in a row to go. And they've seen some amazing things, some miracles really happen, and they're allowed to do things, and some things they've never been allowed to do before, and the team will tell you a little bit about that. But just reminding you, as you see this tonight, it's a very different place, a very, very poor people. I've been to several countries in Central America, and this is by far the poorest people I've ever seen. You're still riding horses down the street. You'll see some pictures probably. They go into these places, they go down the neighborhood, and they call a wagon, and they all load up in the wagon, and they're going down the road, and you're like, where am I? You're like, this is Cuba. So let me tell you a little bit who's on our team this year. Our team leader is Philip and Lila Cockrell, and they work all year long on this, and God has put a really great burden on their heart for this church. And I know you don't want this, but I want to give them a round of applause for all their work that they do. This year we also had Shauna Cotton, Amanda Cotton, Chris Easley, John Stokes, Nathaniel Hernandez, Libby Hernandez, and then we had a lady from Dallas named Anita Munoz and a lady from Florida, Maria Wetzel. Maria's was born in Cuba, and she's gone back now to do ministry several years in a row. So I'm going to turn it over to Philip and the team, and they're going to tell you a little bit about some of the things we got to see. We got a little video and some slides. So,
thank you, Mike. As he said, a couple of weeks ago, last week in September, there were 10 of us that were privileged to go to Cuba to minister in ways that we never had an opportunity to do before. And we want to tell you some of that. We're going to share some testimonies. But before we do that, I think that I'd like you to see a little video to see missions in action. This video was put together by folks in our church, but also assisted by people in the church in San Cristobal. They wanted to start a video ministry, and so they filmed us as we ministered throughout the week. And I think if you see the pictures, we can tell you more and you'll understand better. Go ahead. Thank you. We had a lot of fun while we were down there this last week in September. But you need to understand where this is and what kind of environment we were being able to share the love of Jesus. 1959, the Castros, Fidel, and Rafael took over, had a revolution, and took over the country of Cuba over from a dictator. So they went from a dictatorship to communism. One of the first things that Fidel Castro did was to outlaw all of the churches in Cuba and to say that nobody could go to church anymore. There is no room for God in a communist environment, in a communist culture. There was a mini uprising that the people said, wait a minute, we have our churches, you've got to be able to let us share and to worship our God. And he did not want that, but he finally did relent and said, yes, you can go to church, but you cannot repair any of the buildings. You cannot build any new ones. His plan was that the churches would crumble and that Christianity would just go away. Well, he was right in the sense that the buildings crumbled. And in about 1980, when the buildings were getting so unsafe, they had another mini uprising in Cuba and say, you've got to at least let us work on and repair churches that are crumbling because the people will get hurt. And he said, okay, you can repair the churches, but you cannot build any new ones and you cannot start any new churches. Well, that began the ministry that we had a chance to participate in September. And that was churches from the United States would send groups down to Cuba, construction teams, to be able to repair buildings that were falling apart. That's how we got started in 2013. We were sent to San Cristobal, Cuba, to be able to work on, we were told, to repair a roof on a church. Well, when we got there, we found that our team was so late, they'd been waiting so long for somebody to come help, that the building had crumbled, and that they had been waiting for years for the government to approve their ability to rebuild their church. Could not build a new one. So they left up some rebar sticking up out of the ground and sold it to the government as a repair job. And when we arrived in Cuba, Clint, can you go ahead and show the first picture? We were going to repair a roof on nothing. There was nothing but rubble, and we worked for a solid week. But you know, the Lord has a way of picking people to go on mission trips. This was going to be hard, back-breaking work, and our team, the average age was 61. But we got in there and we worked, but the Lord put Olin Owens on our team, and he was an engineer. He may not have been able to dig all day long in these holes, but he was able to look at the plans. He could see the vision for this church, and he convinced the people that we needed to focus on a small portion of that, finish it, put the concrete in, and take pictures and bring it back to the United States and be able to show some progress, and that would encourage not only his church but other people to be involved. And that's exactly what we did, and the leadership of Olin Owens helped us to get to that point. We poured the first concrete in 32 footings that were 7 feet square and 7 feet deep. We had to dig it with picks and shovels out of concrete and clay. And this is showing the progression. This is about the third year that we went down there. You can see the building is starting to take form. And this was year before last, where we were pouring concrete on the top of the second floor with our crane in between power lines that could electrocute everybody that was there if those cranes had hit them. This is what the building looks like today. It is a three-story building from rubble in the span of about 6 years. Last year, when you remember Hurricane Irma, when they were expecting it to come across the entire country of Cuba, the island, the government came to the church and said, this is the strongest building in all of Western Cuba, and this will be used as a shelter for people if the hurricane gets this far. Now, it actually hit the eastern side and bounced up to the north, did not get to the western side, but if you've been watching the TV over the last couple of days, you saw the eye of Hurricane Michael went just to the west of Cuba, and this building probably today is being used as a rescue center for people that need to be gotten out of the storm. The pastor was very excited about that. You bring the people in, you're bringing them into a church, and we're going to share the love of Jesus with them when they do come. That's what their attitude was. This is what the inside of this church building looks like today. It's Ron Morrow that went with us last year. We had the privilege of worshiping for the first time in the sanctuary the last week of September, and they had their first baptismal service. They had six people to be baptized, and after the sermon, they had six more people come forward and pray to ask Jesus to come in their heart. We were privileged. We were privileged to be able to do things that you may have seen in Larry's column in Generations. We led eight backyard Bible clubs out in the neighborhoods. We preached in two of the 54 house churches that they have established in San Cristobal. They're actually prayer rooms. That's what Mike was talking about. They're limited. They're registered with the government, but they're not really churches. They're called prayer rooms. And they are limited in number of people that can actually attend. But to the Cubans, they're churches. And they have called out 9 full-time missionaries in their church to minister in these prayer rooms, 54 of them. And we had the opportunity to go and share messages in those as well. We also did a Bible study for the men and for the women, and then preached in 3 churches that they had actually established. I wanted you to see this gentleman right here. He's 102 years old. He was actually saved about a week before we arrived, and we got to go and speak some words of encouragement to him. When he saw the Americans, he said, "We're going to be saved." He was old enough to remember what life was like before Castro took over, and he was encouraged that we were Americans and that we were going to bring salvation to their country and bring them back to freedom. That was something we can't do. We can't not talk about political issues. But he was expressing his gratitude to God that he allowed him to live 102 years so that he could know the Lord before he died. Can you imagine? 102 years. This is the way we got around. And you can see that we had some clowns. One of the things they asked us to do this year is to bring some clown outfits. Now, this may sound a little strange to you, but in the Cuban culture, it has not been corrupted with things that we see on TV and the internet, and clowns are still happy people. And Pastor Ruben told us that not only if we brought the clown outfits, that would encourage, that would draw a crowd, but would also say to the parents of those children that came to the backyard Bible clubs, this is a safe place. So it spoke not only excitement, but it spoke safety to the people that were there. So we took some clown uniforms and some of our team members dressed up in them and had a great time. And we shared with the children, and their parents usually came as well. Now, I want to stop and let Shauna Cotton come and talk to you just a few minutes about the children's ministry.
So we took our reluctant clowns, who turned into enthusiastic clowns when they realized that you have to go back in time, like Bozo, Ronald McDonald, when clowns were just innocent and happy. And you can see, as you're traveling down the main street in an open air vehicle, that you might draw a little attention as you're going down in your clown costume. And so kids would run after the wagon, and people would shout and point. And then we would arrive at homes over the course of 3 days. We went to 8 different home locations, homes of church members who had invited the children in their neighborhood to come for a backyard Bible club. And we would have some of the children would be associated with the church, but I believe that many were not. They were just neighborhood kids. We would arrive not knowing where we would be, sometimes on the front porch, basically in the street, sometimes on a back patio, sometimes in a very narrow living room, smaller than this stage, with benches along the side for the children to sit. And we had groups ranging in size from 20-some-odd kids to 60, and ranging in age from 2-year-olds to probably 14. And here, that would be a little bit of a problem if you had an audience, or a challenge if you had an audience with that age range, that many kids in a small area. But we always did our, we would do a song and we would do our story right off the bat because we didn't know how much time we had. And so we wanted to do the really important thing first. And I'm just going to tell you, those kids sat on the edge of their seats to listen to what we had to share with them. We taught them from Luke 15 and the stories of the lost sheep and the lost coin. And we talked about how the shepherd and the woman who lost one of her 10 coins, how they looked diligently for them, and how when they found them, they rejoiced and they invited their friends and neighbors to rejoice with them, and how that is how God is with us, that he is always looking for us, calling us, and that there is rejoicing in heaven when even one sinner repents. And so that would allow us to talk about what is sin. And then after we had finished telling our stories, which we told in Spanish, and I'm just going to say right now, by the grace of God, we were able to communicate in Spanish with them. And we were always accompanied by a church staff member. And then the staff member would issue an invitation to the children and ask them to stand if they wanted to follow Jesus. And in every instance where they did that, multiple children stood up. Maybe five, maybe eight. Our home, the last day, we had 20-some-odd kids there, and I think 16 or 18 of the children stood up. Now, I don't know exactly what that means because we're not there to follow up, but I can tell you that this church is a church that will follow up with those children. And the homes they were in, the people that live there who go to the church, they know who those children were, and so they will follow up with them. If time allowed, we played a simple game, did a simple craft, took Polaroid pictures of the kids, and they were just so enthusiastic for whatever we had for them. They truly are joyful people. Everything Mike said is true. More gracious, serving, giving people I've never met. And it was so exciting that their moms, as Philip said, sometimes adults would be with them every day. My team, the pastor went with our team, and so sometimes we would have two teams or three on the wagon or in the school bus that lost a vehicle part in the road on our way that we had to stop and pick up, put on the bus with us. And we were the last to arrive at our home and the first to leave. And, lost my train of thought. Telling you about the, he would always invite the cochero, the driver of the wagon, and often he or the bus driver would have a child or their grandchildren with them, and they would come to the program. And so it was just amazing. I think that we also did three sessions on Sunday morning, Sunday evening at the church, Sunday afternoon at a house church. We did a whole other lessons on the armor of God with those children. And I think that easily we ministered to 300, 350 children, parents. And so we don't know. We don't know what is happening, but we can trust that God is going to use the seeds that we planted in the lives of those children and in the lives of their families. And I will just tell you that children are beautiful everywhere.
Lila's going to tell about the women's ministry. She's been a veteran of all six of the trips.
First of all, I want to thank you for all your prayers and all of you who have contributed financially, and for all you ladies that brought one of your personal bracelets. It's a fun thing, of course, to take things to Cuba to give as gifts because they have so little, but it's so much more fun to say it's from the women of my church who love you and are praying for you and for our team while we're there. So we do have a time each year where we have a women's Bible study, and the women are always excited to come and participate. And this year, we tried to encourage them in their own testimony and how to share in their community with their neighbors and their families the testimony. A real sweet time that we had to minister to the pastor's wife. Her mother had just passed away the week before we got there. And so, of course, her heart was tender and her whole family had broken hearts. And she has two young teenage sons, and one of them was especially close to his grandmother. So we had a really precious time with Ruth as she grieved, and we could share in that with her and minister to her. And as is true with all mission trips, you go thinking you have a lot to give, and you come back with so much more.
Yes. Chris Easley, member that travels all the way from Atlanta, Texas, to come to church, is going to share with you his perspective of what the Cuban people are like and what we learn from them.
Well, I have to say it was a very humbling trip for me. We go down there with the intention of ministering to the people, but I think they ministered more to me than I think we did to them. It was I've never in my life to thank God for a dum-dum candy or napkins. And the cool thing was that stood out to me was the people down there. We sat down and the ladies prepared our meals, and they were good meals. In fact, I told them, I said, I wish I could bring all of y'all back home just so y'all could cook for me. But whenever we sat down, you know, we would have our napkins there at the table. And, you know, of course, we'd wipe our mouths and, you know, all of that. And one of the ladies told us that what they do is that I guess the Americans bring napkins to Cuba, you know, for eating meals and stuff. And what they do is that the doubled layered ones, that they'll peel them apart. That way they'll last twice as long. And I was thinking, you know, we go to Walmart and I can go get some there and just throw it away and think nothing of it. Same thing with the candy. I was one of the clowns and got to be with the kids some and just passing out candy, and just one dum-dum or Tootsie Roll, whatever, their little faces would just light up with just joy. And even the adults are very much the same way as that. And so, you know, it was just very humbling, and it made me thank the Lord so much for just the little things in life. And that's what they taught me, was just be grateful for the little things we have in life, because we are so blessed to be here in America.
And Chris brings up something. You remember how Mike was explaining to you how this is one of the poorest countries he's ever seen. The Cubans don't think of themselves as poor. They have what they have, and they make do with what they have. When we go down to Cuba, we take two suitcases apiece. We have to put all of our clothing in a backpack because we're loading up our suitcases with supplies. We take coffee, we take candy, 2 pounds of candy per person to pass out to all of the people that come to the meetings. We carry Bibles with us. We carry the tools, the hammers, the saws, the nails, the things that are going to be needed for the trip. We carry those in the suitcases. And when we go down there, we send money in advance to be able to buy the food. We let the Cuban workers come and eat meals with us, and they get to have meat at every meal that they work with us while we're in Cuba. The average Cuban gets to have meat about once a month. If they are really wealthy in their standards, they might eat meat once a week. But they are paid $20 a month by the Cuban government, and that is their pay for whatever they do for the government itself. We take up a collection from the folks that go on our trip, just if they have some extra money, so that we can leave some for the Cuban workers. They get paid $2 a day to come and work with us in backbreaking work, and we try to leave them some money when we leave. And so far, the graciousness of our group, we've been able to give every one of the Cuban workers, the cooks and workers, $20 when we've left. And that's a whole month's pay for those folks. They really love Americans. They love the Christians. And they enjoy seeing us come. We enjoy being there. They know how to practice what is called intentional evangelism. Shauna was talking about how people, would they would ask them to stand if they had an interest in wanting to know the gospel. All of our group were trained to use bilingual tracts to be able to share the gospel with people they had an opportunity to talk to one-on-one. They all had a chance to share their testimonies of where God is working in our lives. And when we do that, they have questions. They want to know. They want to see what God really is. Some of them have never heard of Jesus, and they have questions. So the pastor has people at all of the meetings, and they're watching to see who expresses an interest, and they'll go back during the week and share the gospel with them one-on-one, and they have just had amazing results. The church had 100 members when we went in 2013. They have 350 members now in the church, and they their plan is to start 3 new churches within the next 5 years. And when they say churches, it's probably going to be one of those prayer rooms, but they want to have a full-time pastor that's responsible for the churches. And they support, with the help of some American churches, they support 9 missionaries full-time to be able to work in these house churches. And their purpose is to win San Cristobal to the Lord. They are doing some great things. And what was it? Henry Blackaby said that we just need to find out what God's doing and join him in it. We saw where God was at work in Cuba. We just had a chance to join him. And great things have been done. The first year we went, we couldn't even step outside the church property. This year, we got to have meetings all over the community because that church had gained the respect of the community as doing things for them that they were allowed, not authorized, but allowed to do things that had never been done before in San Cristobal. And we just happened to get a chance to go with them. Do you have anything else you want to say, Mike?
We just want to spend a few minutes praying for this church, if y'all don't mind. So would you just, maybe if you're with a friend or if your spouse, would you just take a few minutes and pray with them together? Or if you're by yourself, you can just pray silently and pray for this church. Pray for the pastor. His name's Reuben, and his wife and his family and the 9 missionaries that they have. And let's just take a few minutes and lift them up in prayer tonight, because I know they're probably doing the same thing there tonight that we're doing, worshiping, and that God would continue to protect them and provide everything that they need, continue to give them strength and joy and patience, and that God would soften the heart of leaders there, and he would just, his Holy Spirit would open doors and bring more religious freedom to that country, and that it would be unexplainable, and it would become a stronghold for Christianity. It would become a nation that's under revival. Let's pray for that.